On any other day, I would have found that quite interesting. Whatever was happening in Dr. Bairstow's office was happening without me, and I found I didn't really care. In lieu of Leon, I headed towards the other place I felt safe. Rosie Lee looked up as I entered. "What's happening? They told me to stay in here and I'll be wanting to go home soon." I looked at the clock. 2:10. I'm astonished you stayed this late. You're usually out of the door by now, so as to make your 5 o'clock finishing time. My life was a lot easier when you were trapped in 1399. So was mine. Stick the kettle on. It's your turn. Stick the kettle on, or I'll make sure you're still here this time next week. There was a lot of kettle banging for the next few minutes, but we got there in the end. I took my mug to the window to wait for the appearance of the time police. Dr. Bairstow must have finished his letter by now. They could be here any minute. They were late. I'd finished my tea and was considering embarking on negotiations for another when a squat black pod appeared. This one was much smaller than usual. It looked what it was. A prison. 4 armoured men marched out. Their visors were down. That and the antennae sprouting from their helmets gave them the sinister look of blind insects. This must be one of their clean-up squads, the ones you never want to meet. I watched Evans go to greet them. They talked for a few minutes and then set off around the outside of the building. I couldn't see from up here, but I could imagine faces lining the windows. Everyone would know something was up. I watched them disappear from sight, round to the front of the building. Faintly, I heard the front doors opening. I don't know what made me do it, but I set down my mug and left the room, promising myself I'd stay well out of things. I leaned over the banisters and watched them emerge through the vestibule. Evans led them through the hall. They marched in 2 pairs of 2, in step, even as they climbed the stairs. I watched them pause at the outer door and knock. Cox let them in. Everything went quiet again. I stood in the corner of the gallery, just outside R&D. Everything was silent. I had no idea what was going on in Dr. Bairstow's office. I could imagine her somehow breaking free, killing 8 armed men, overcoming Dr. Bairstow and his cannon, and escaping out of the window. Had anyone even thought of that? Just to put my mind at rest, I trotted around the gallery and peered out of a window. Of course someone had thought of that. An armoured and visored guard stood silently on the steps, looking around him. For God's sake, Maxwell, get a grip. I retired back to my corner and waited. I don't know for how long. And then the world started up again. Mrs. Partridge's door opened. Evans and Cox appeared. Everything went smoothly. I could barely see her for armed figures around her. Evans and Cox were in front, going on ahead. Then 2 time police officers. Then Dottle, or whatever her bloody name was, sandwiched between the other 2 officers, with Keller and Galaccio bringing up the rear. Markham ranged up and down, checking this way and that. Below, the vestibule door opened, and the remaining officer crossed the hall and began to climb the stairs, weapon raised in case of trouble. He paused at the top of the stairs, checked one last time, and nodded the all clear. The procession marched past him, and he fell in behind. I stared, feeling the hairs on the back of my neck lift. Something was wrong. Something wasn't right, and suddenly I had it. Only 4 officers had left the time police pod. It wasn't anyone's fault, or it was everyone's fault. Take your pick. The time police thought he was one of ours. We thought he was one of theirs. I wasn't stupid enough to burst out of the shadows shouting, "Wait!" because that would just get me shot many, many times. I remember I eased my weight onto the balls of my feet prior to uttering a warning. I can't remember what I was going to say because subsequent events pushed it out of my mind, but it was too late anyway. He had his weapon switched to single shot. Without seeming to take any aim at all, he fired at the 2 officers on either side of Dottle. They went straight down. He fired again, and Galaccio and Cox dropped to the floor. Markham was racing around the gallery, shouting instructions as he came. Someone was returning fire, but I wasn't watching. I was watching Dottle. She didn't hesitate, breaking free and running down the stairs to the half-landing, taking them 2 at a time, and then straight up the other side. Turning left, she disappeared into the gloom. I went after her like a greyhound. Bullets were flying everywhere, but I knew for a certainty that none would hit me. Because Lisa Bloody Dottle was escaping, and there was no way I could allow that. Behind me I could hear shouting. All the alarms went off, and then I was through the fire door and standing on a hot, dusty, dead fly-speckled landing. The door slammed behind me, cutting off all sound. It was a hefty door. All our fire doors are hefty, but this one was at the end of the R&D corridor and could survive a nuclear blast, and for all I know, had done so in the past. I stood in silence, listening. Had she fled up or down? Down, surely. There was nothing up there but the roof. Down the stairs led to the car park, fresh air and freedom. I turned to my left and began to descend. Three steps later, I stopped. I don't know why. I stopped moving, but I also stopped reacting and started thinking. We'd caught her unawares. I'd seen the shock on her face. She'd been taken completely by surprise. She had no idea the device had been discovered, so the device wasn't transmitting to her. And if not to her, then to whom? Well, I think we all know the answer to that one. So, never mind who, where. Markham had said he thought it wouldn't have a long range, so somewhere quite close then. The woods above St. Mary's would be good. Someone could easily hide up there and remain undiscovered. But was it close enough for a rescue to be attempted at such short notice? Barely an hour had passed since I'd made the discovery. And how had he got into the grounds unseen? Yes, Markham had a full team escorting Dottle, but he wouldn't have left the monitors unattended. Someone would have noticed. I had a sudden vision of Dottle with an enormous plate full of sandwiches and other goodies, telling me some rigmarole about pulling an all-nighter so she could impress Thirsk and Halcombe. She'd stood in front of me, her pink face radiating earnestness and an anxiety to do well, and I'd swallowed it, hook, line, and sinker. She'd lied over and over again, and I'd believed every word she'd said to me. On that occasion, she'd been heading towards the stairs. She'd been going up, to the roof. And that was where she was heading now. Ronan would be covering her retreat. Was it possible one man could overcome Markham and his team, to say nothing of the Time Police? Even with the element of surprise, could he do it? Not my problem. I closed my mind to everything else. Markham could handle all that. That was his job. My job was to prevent Dottle getting away. I turned, discarded speed in favour of stealth, and crept up the stairs towards the roof. Chapter 39. I had no idea what I was going to do when I got there. I was completely unarmed and a trifle wobbly because even the equivalent of jail fever can do that to a girl. On the other hand, Dottle was still in restraints. Her hands were tied behind her back, so she couldn't run fast, climb up or down, or throw anything at me, and she wasn't armed. I told myself the odds were on my side. The fire door to the roof was wide open. I could see bright sunlight and blue sky. There might have been birds singing, I don't know. I could hear only my own quiet footsteps and the thump of my own heart. I reached the door and stood to one side, thinking. If it was me, I would stand behind the door, wait until my pursuer was crossing the threshold, and then kick it shut with all my might. With luck, the metal door would catch them in the face, possibly render them unconscious, break their nose, and even knock them backwards down the stairs. Two could play at that game. I stood listening. Complete silence. I took two steps forward, raised my right leg, and kicked the door as hard as I could. It slammed back, rebounded off the wall, and I had to jump aside before it hit me. Bugger. She hadn't been hiding behind the door. She was out on the roof somewhere. And the slamming door hadn't been quiet. She would know I was here. What could she do to me? She could conceal herself behind the chimneys and play hide-and-seek. But why? The longer she was up here, the greater chance of recapture. What was the point? Unless this was just the result of blind panic, the urge to run as far and fast as possible, she was trapped up here. All I had to do was close the fire door. There was no access from the outside, and wait for reinforcements to turn up. The answer came hard on that thought. Oh my God, Was there a pod up here? Was it possible? Was it actually possible that someone who might have a small pod with a camouflage device could have been living on our roof? I had no idea how long Ronan could have been up here, but long enough, apparently. I couldn't believe it, but it made perfect sense. He'd been up here all the time. No one ever came up here. He could have spent his days lolling around in the sunshine as she brought him tasty snacks, like a bloody holiday. The time police had been scouring the timeline for him, and he'd been here all along. Was this the reason Rigby and Loris, the two most incompetent pod operators in history, happened to have St. Mary's coordinates programmed in? I'd wondered at the coincidence and then forgotten it. So Dottle had been spying, and he'd been up here listening. Between them, they'd got just about everything covered. No wonder he couldn't be found. He was on our bloody roof. Any trace of his pod would have been lost among the signatures of our own pods, and even if it hadn't, everyone would have assumed it was only an echo. Now, far too late, I remembered the time police officer looking for Adrian and Mikey. He'd reported echoes everywhere, including on the roof. Ronan had probably been up here the whole bloody time. We'd been sheltering Clive Ronan. We'd even bloody fed him. I was a cauldron of fury. Hideous things were bubbling to the surface. She would suffer for this. This was for Helen. I took a deep breath and stepped out. The heat hit me immediately. The familiar long roof stretched out in front of me. I saw clumps of chimneys at regular intervals. They'd been put in when St. Mary's was rebuilt after the Civil War, except for the big one over there. The original chimney for the big fireplace in the hall, the one I'd watched being built 600-odd years ago. It was blocky and massive. That's where she'd be hiding. I wanted her to know she was trapped, so I slammed the door closed behind me, keeping well away from the parapet, because it's not high, and I didn't want her jumping out at me and pushing me over. I set off to find her. I was actually feeling quite confident. There were twigs and small stones and all the debris dropped by birds over the years, but Mr. Strong was efficient and conscientious. There was nothing up here that could be used as a weapon, and she still had her hands tied. So, the burning question, where was his pod? And would she have access? If she did, then she might already be inside. And that would be a bit of a bugger, because all she had to do was sit tight. And if, somehow, Ronan had got away downstairs, he could be pounding up the stairs at this very moment. And he was very definitely armed. I might actually have only seconds before he turned up. Throwing caution to the winds, I'm an historian, and it's my job description, I ran across the roof, straight towards the big central chimney. She'd anticipated me. I was only halfway there when she shot out from behind a smaller chimney stack, cannoned into me and sent me flying. I rolled across the hot roof. Something kicked me in the back, and again in the side. I tried to roll away, but she followed me, kicking and stamping and shrieking at me. The only thing that saved me was that she was wearing those sensible court shoes so beloved by women who like their footwear to be stylish yet practical during their working day. I, on the other hand, was wearing my boots, beloved by women who like to kick the living shit out of people during their working day. She was kicking out so hard that one shoe flew off and landed a good distance away. It didn't stop her. She just swapped legs. I stopped rolling away and rolled towards instead, grabbing her foot and twisting. She fell on top of me, and now I had her because she couldn't get up. I heaved myself painfully to my feet and refrained from returning the favour, boot-wise. The mood I was in, I would have killed her. Careful to keep my distance, I wiped blood off my lip and told her to stay still. She managed to push herself into a sitting position, and we both glared at each other. I thought I was remarkably restrained. I really don't like you. She was dirty and dusty, and yet she still managed to smile. Well, that doesn't surprise me in the slightest. You don't like me because I'm exactly like you, aren't I? Manipulating every situation to my advantage, lying and deceiving to get what I want, sacrificing others, just as you do. We're actually very alike, you and I, don't you think? Even her voice was different. Lower in pitch, more confident. The voice of someone who knew the next person through the door would be her accomplice, and I'd be dead. We're not alike in any way. Oh, but we are. No, we're not. I could kill you for what you've done to Peterson. She shrugged. And yet another similarity. I will kill you for what you've done to Ronan. What? What did I do to him? How deranged are you? Suddenly she was furious, struggling up onto her knees. He trusted you. I warned him you were a slippery, two-faced bitch, and he wouldn't listen. He trusted you. Do you know how difficult that is for him? He never trusts anyone. Bairstow was his friend, and he killed Annie Besant. Ronan broke his heart over her. He grieved for her. He came to you. He trusted you, and you betrayed him as well. Everyone betrays him in the end. I felt an astonishing need to defend myself. It wasn't me. It wasn't St. Mary's. It was the Time Police. You were the bait. You were the trap. You're a dishonest, deceitful bitch who uses everyone around her and doesn't care about the cost. How many people died over the years because of you? You let Helen Foster die. Ronan killed Helen Foster. Don't you put that on me. I was there, you were there, and you did nothing. Everyone said so. Even Peterson said it. You do nothing and people die all around you. Not as many as die around Ronan. Because you betrayed him. He was the one who wanted to end it all. We wanted to be together. We would have been, and... I spoke quietly to get her attention. Is that what he told you? She stopped suddenly, panting with emotion. What did you say? Did he never tell you about Isabella Barclay? What about her? I pretended to hesitate. Well, if he hasn't told you, then it's probably better if I say nothing. He'll tell you if he wants you to know. You're lying. I'm not. I swear I'm not. Look, obviously I don't want to say too much if he hasn't mentioned her. I am never going to heaven. But you should definitely ask him about Izzy Barclay. Why? What happened to her? She died too. They all die, in the end. She was struggling to get to her feet. I had no means of stopping her, and I certainly wasn't going to within touching distance. Every second I had her attention was a second nearer her recapture. This is not the same at all. We want to be together. That's all we ever wanted. He came to you. He trusted you. I told him over and over. I told him not to. And I was right. He should have listened to me. You betrayed him. She was on her feet now, and we were screaming at each other, but even over the noise we were making, I heard it. I heard the door open behind me and realized what she'd been doing. She'd been doing the same as me. We'd been keeping each other occupied until reinforcements arrived. And now, of course, the question was, who had opened the door? Who was standing behind me? I turned slowly, confident it would be Markham. It wasn't Markham. Bollocks. He pushed the door closed with his foot, wedged it shut, and started to edge across the roof. It gave me a shock to see half-healed scratch marks all down one side of his face. I'd done that, at Persepolis, only a week or so ago, and now that I looked more carefully, his wrist was bandaged too. My one thought was that I could do nothing about Ronan, but I could and would prevent Dottle escaping. She was obviously privy to his plans, and the Time Police would make her talk. If they couldn't, then I was prepared to have a go myself. The same thought had obviously occurred to him. He pointed his gun at her. Sorry, Lisa. She was backing away. We both were. Because that makes such a difference when confronted by a maniac with a high-powered weapon, probably capable of disabling an aircraft carrier. Clive, what are you doing? I'm sorry, Lisa. As they say, it was good while it lasted. He was striding across the roof, gun pointed towards both of us, heading towards his pod, presumably. He was going to get away. Where were Markham and the security team? I could hear shouts and footsteps pounding on the stairs. They'd be here in seconds. But he'd be gone in seconds. He stood in a patch of empty roof and said, "Door." The door opened. She screamed, "Wait for me! What are you doing?" "Can't afford to hang about. See you around sometime." "You can't leave me here!" "You underestimate me, my dear. Of course I can." Her voice was that of a little girl, a bewildered little girl.
But why?
He paused in the door, turned and smiled. A nice smile, not his usual sneer or a mad grimace or an unpleasant smirk, but a pleasant smile, warm and friendly. Because, my dear, you're not Annie. He raised the gun and fired at her. I heard the shot. The impact knocked her back hard into me. I staggered against the low parapet, which caught me mid-thigh. I flailed wildly for a moment, but her hands were tied. She could do nothing to save herself, and her weight carried us both over the edge. The last thing I saw was Markham bursting out onto the roof. Too bloody late now.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.